As probably most of you know, I think everybody knows, but this last Sunday, Samuel was baptized after being saved a couple of weeks ago during youth meetings, and Michael was saved recently also, and he's going to be baptized this afternoon as well. And Michael's going to give his testimony here in a couple of minutes. And I think that's important because your testimony is something that's very powerful. It's something every believer, every true believer has. A testimony is not what you've accomplished in your life. It's not what you've overcome. It's not the sin you've overcome. It's not not the story of those things. It's not what you've given up. It's a story of what God did in your life. It's a story of how God changed you, how God transformed you, how God saved you. In Revelation 12:11 says, speaking of the brethren, let's go back, I'll read a couple of verses. It says, the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels cast out with him. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now has come salvation and strength in the kingdom of our God, and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. And they love not their lives unto death. Satan right now is accusing the brethren before Christ. He is actively seeking to deceive, to destroy us. And it's almost like, you know, you get some families or jobs or whatever, you get one person's always ratting to the boss or the parent, you know, and that's, in a sense, what Satan is doing is continuously accusing us before God. And the problem is what he's accusing is right. Because every one of us has areas in our life or sin in our life that have not been dealt with. We do not measure up the standard of Christ yet. But and Satan is busy accusing the brethren, seeking to overcome them. But it says, speaking of the saints, the brethren, they overcame him, they overcame Satan by the blood of the Lamb, and by the word of their testimony, which is Christ. The word of your testimony is what Christ has done in your life. The blood of the Lamb is Christ's blood. That is the only strength we have against Satan. The only real strength we have against Satan is the finished work of Christ. In our lives. So Michael's going to give his testimony now, and then we'll talk a little more after that.
How do you do this, Timothy? Everybody's staring at you. Well, recently, I was saved by Timothy's message on it's not feelings. I was having troubles with that, looking for a feeling, but it's not. It's about belief and faith. But when I was really young, a little troublemaker, younger, but I've grew up with the gospel all my life. My mom was saved, preaching the gospel, but I didn't care, so. I thought I was invincible, but I'm not. But then Jack would preach it to me too, and yeah, don't know. It's just, I've heard the gospel all the time. It's just, you can hear something and not listen. But then you just open your eyes one day and start listening. But the first time I actually knew hell existed, Brandon's the only one who knows this, by the way. When I used to work at Kraft, when I was 18 or 19 years old, I drank energy drinks 4 or 5 a day, and my heart stopped. I heard screaming. I was at my girlfriend's house, and I come to again, and I asked who was screaming. She said, "No one. It was me." And it was really scary for me because I knew hell existed. I knew exactly where I was going. But still, didn't care. Don't ask me why. But God was always trying to get a hold of me, but you know how we all are prideful and selfish. You'd want to live for yourself. But then I came here. I didn't really treat people the way I should have. Like, I didn't show respect to my parents very well. Anyone. The only thing I can do is ask for forgiveness for everybody who I hurt. So, that's why I'm kind of hoping that I see my mother and Jack today. But then I came here and I heard Brandon's message on repentance, and I heard Ezra and Timothy, and started convicting me really, really bad. Yeah. I can show off a front that I'm happy all the time, but I'm not always happy. I'm a very good liar, you could say. But especially with my emotions, because I don't like to show them. Because what I thought when I was younger is that if you show your emotion, people can hurt you. It's not the way to live, because then you become emotionless and very desensitized. So I could go through life just blah, I just didn't care. But then I met these 3 guys, Timothy, Brandon, and Ezra, and everybody else here. I started changing. People said they noticed a difference, but I didn't. But I talked to Ezra one day and I asked him, "How can you guys be so happy?" I was kind of envious of all of you. But then I figured it out after hearing all these messages. Repentance, and it's not a feeling, it's a faith. It's faith by Christ that He can take all my problems, not me. And that's what really helped me. It's Timothy's message on the whole. It's all about faith, not feelings. And I'm getting really nervous, so stop staring at me. And, that's what really saved me, is these 3 with their messages that God gave them. And I always have troubles with, there's 2 words that I hate, the "what if" that puts so many things in your life. What if he doesn't like me? What if she doesn't like me? What if I'm not saved? What if, the stupidest words out there. I don't like them. But I appreciate what God gave to me, these 3 guys who preached to me. And that's what really saved me, is this went over a lot better in my head. But I praise God that He saved me and brought me here. I don't really know what else to say. Okay, I think I'm done. You can cover your beard. I don't know how you guys do it.
Yeah, it usually goes off really, really good in your head. You're thinking it all out, and you stand there and you can preach to yourself in your head, and you sound like, you know. Yeah, you sound like Keith Daniel in your head, you know. I liked what he said about hearing. You can hear it. You can hear it all your life, and you just ignore it. You hear it, but you're not hearing it. It's, you know, like they say, it goes in one ear and out the other. Most of us here, most everybody here was raised in a Christian family in one form or another. Not everybody, but a lot of people here. And that happens a lot where you hear it constantly growing up. It's, you're immersed in religion. Christianity, you have to behave because your parents make you behave, and your parents teach you how to behave, and your parents basically teach you how to act like a Christian, which isn't a bad thing, but it's what happens. And so by the time you get to be a little bit older, you pretty well know how to act like a Christian, and you've been around Christians, and you can pull it off pretty well. I mean, some can pull it off better than others. Some do a better job of convincing themselves that they're saved than others. Before I was saved, I made a profession of faith when I was about, I made a couple professions of faith, but the first one I remember was at some sort of concert my parents went to when I was about 6. I think it was a Sandy Patty concert or something to that effect, but something like that. And they had some sort of appeal, and I don't remember. I was a little kid, and it was just kind of a thing to do, you know. And over the course of growing up, when I was a kid, I got saved a couple different times. Saved, quote unquote. But all the time I was growing up, even though I got baptized when I was about 12 or 14, I don't remember exactly, about 12, 13, 14, something like that. At a church we were going to, and they had a baptism service, and I got baptized there. Remember, as I was a kid, I used to periodically go through phases. It'd be a phase that lasts for a while, where I'd be really, really scared of eternity. When I get thinking about eternity and I hear a sermon or something, I get thinking about eternity and start getting really, really scared and really, really uncomfortable with the whole thing. And I was scared of a lot of different things. I mean, I remember when my mom tells me I was about 7 years old, and we used to get Reader's Digest all the time, and they're always laying around, and they have this section that called Drama in Real Life, where it's a story about something that happened. Tornadoes, fires, wildfires, earthquakes, stuff like that, and some hero and drama in real life. You know. And they had an article about, I guess there was some tornado back when, and a tornado blew through a town and pretty much demolished a town and everything. A lot of people got killed, and it was a story about that. And for years, I was scared of death tornadoes. Every time a thunderstorm went through, I loved the storm. It was really cool. It was awesome, but constantly just petrified of a tornado, you know. During the summertime, I slept in the top bunk, and I'd always be worried that the house would catch on fire, and the house would burn down, and I'd get, you know, I'd smell a little bit of smoke, or I think I smelled smoke, and, you know, I could not sleep, I could not rest. I mean, I'd be feeling the ceiling, you know, feeling for hot spots, feeling the wall, you know, all this kind of stuff, and you know, until I figured out that it was actually neighbor's barbecue or bonfire or whatever, something, you know, if I knew what it was, I was okay. If I didn't, I think halftime I imagined the smoke, but and we had a wood stove, so when you have a wood stove in the basement, there's always smoke somewhere in the wintertime, or smell of it. But I was constantly living in fear. All growing up, we had, but at the same time, I think I knew I wasn't saved. Because I knew my life didn't line up, even as a little kid, but the teaching, we weren't in very good churches then, and the teaching in most mainstream churches is pretty washed out. So the doctrine is technically correct in their doctrine statement, but unless you read that and really get convicted on that, you're not gonna, the preaching isn't gonna usually do a whole lot. And one thing in particular haunted me for years, and when I was around seven, eight, somewhere around there. But we had foster kids in and out of the home, a number of them, and they were always younger than me and my one sister, Shana. Because my parents felt like, you know, they shouldn't have kids messing birth order up like that, so they were always a little bit younger. But we ended up with a couple that were real, you know, they came from, we got them in a 3 or 4, and you get a child that's, during pregnancy, the mother's on drugs and alcohol, and the first three or four years of the kid's life, they're getting bounced around from one terrible situation to another. It messes them up. By the time you get them, they're a mess. And there was this one kid we had, and he was about the worst, and he was just awful. He was terrible. And me and my sister, or I guess I shouldn't blame her, drag her into it, but I hated him. Just despised him. You know, and he caused all kinds of trouble, and what started happening was we had our little mafia going on in the home, you know, and I of course ran it, being the oldest, but you know, it's just that underworld you get, and anybody who grew up in a big family or any family, especially a big family, kind of knows, you know, you get that pecking order and the click and the way things go, and there's, you know, and he did so many things that were so off the wall. I remember we had these little plastic chairs, these little Tykes chairs, little yellow ones like this, little 4 fat legs, you know, the gold little set, probably everybody's had them. And it was a 2-story house, and there was the stairs went down, you know, halfway, landing, and then, you know, the bottom like this. And then there was like a banister across the top, like a 4-foot wall, you know, you put like flowers or whatnot on. You know, one time he took one of those chairs and he threw it over the thing, boom, down the stairs, you know, that wouldn't even, never even occur to me, you know, us, that kind of thing. We did all kinds of bad stuff, but I mean, just that kind of, to me, that was like on purpose driving a car into a tree, you know, just like, you know, but so after that, if he made me mad, I would blackmail him. You know, you're going to do this, I'm going to get you in trouble. And if he didn't do what I did, I'd toss a chair over or do something like toss a chair over to banister. And Mom would come running up. Whoa, you know, he did it. Mom didn't have the understanding at that time or whatever to go and really pick through. And he did so many bad things. And we were, of course, the angels then because that was so, you know. So I did all kinds of stuff, and I remember the chair thing. I remember vaguely a couple other things, but just that kind of thing where, you know, and we had him for, I don't know, maybe 8 months or a year or something like that, and he ended up getting moved on to somewhere else. But that haunted me for years, what I did to him, you know, and just it would just eat me up, you know. At night, mostly at night, because that's when you have time to think. But I got older, and so 16, almost 17, whatever, started working. The minute I started working, I started doing, you know, now you're working, you're outside the family and for a day, and you got money. and you can do what you want. You know, like I went, Mom never let us drink. Mom was always not as health freaky about something as everybody around here is, but she was always pretty concerned about health and stuff like that. And she decided somewhere along the soda was bad because it had salicylates and color and stuff in it. So we weren't allowed to drink soda hardly ever. So I started working. I'm 5-6 Mountain Dews a day and stuff like that, living on this stuff. And which that's not sin necessarily, but just the point is that I started listening to secular music, listening to a lot of country music at that time. And over the next few years, I went from working at Manza Family Farm, which was like a tree farm, which the employees there were about the equivalent of, say, Golden Harvest, mostly young, mostly high school kids, young kids, and it was pretty lawless. I mean, there's kids doing drugs in the back and stuff, and back it was kind of a big tree farm, like a nursery. So, but it was kids and stuff like that, so it was all relatively lame. I went and I moved from there. I got my commercial license, started driving mixer, Dick's Concrete, and I went from kind of the juvenile stuff to men, who it was like a whole different world. I mean, there it was just a lot more hardcore, the language, you know, instead of, you know, they swear a little bit and kind of like, you know, the guy, they just saw it's all they did. They didn't know, you know, it was just a whole different world. And I just went right down with it. But all the time, there's a constant fear. I know something's not right. I know it's wrong. I know what I'm doing is wrong. I mean, I knew that, but there's a constant gut fear of what if I die? What if I die? What if I die? You know, I knew what happened, but you know, so I try to convince myself, you know, you kind of, well, I got saved, so it's kind of, but it, you can kind of brush off in a way. I don't know how I brushed off for that long. You know, but there would be times where you just know. I don't know. During that time, there was a family that they had like, I don't know, 8 or 10 or 12 kids or something. Maybe 9. At the time, I grew up in New York. This was in New York. We lived about 45 minutes from West Point military base, military academy in the base, which is a huge complex. And every 3 years in the military, if anyone knows, in the military, about every 3 years you move. It's just the way it is. They just constantly move you to a different assignment, whatever. So nobody's there more than about 3 years. People are there for 3 years, and then they, you know. Somehow we met this family, and the father was a lieutenant colonel in the Army, and he'd been assigned to West Point for whatever for 3 years. So they were living there. And at the time, we'd been home churching for about 4 or 5 years. Which, by the way, is not biblical. It's not what God calls for. In most cases, 90% of the time, home churching is nothing but a cover for basically not churching, because you either can't be under a church authority, you can't get along with anybody, you don't want to be told what to do, you have to be the king, and you can't be the king in the church because whatever. So you home church. You know, you do it yourself, you do your own thing. It's usually the cover story for that is, oh, well, there's no good churches in the area. That was the story we used. There was no good churches in the area, my family. Biblically, if you're a Christian, the command is you forsake not the assembling of yourselves together. You don't have the option of not being in the body of Christ actively on a regular, daily, weekly basis. So if there's not a good church in your area, you find a different area. You move your area. You don't really have the option of not. But anyway. But we were home churching, which meant we basically effectively weren't going to church. So there was no sermons. We'd listen to sermons sometimes on the radio or videos and things like that. But there wasn't any direction or anything to be convicting. Like Michael mentioned, he comes here and you know, all of a sudden you've got to sit through sermon after sermon after sermon, whether you want to or not. If you're here, you may not really want to hear what's being said, but it's being said. You either plug your ears and walk out, or you listen. Obviously, Michael came here voluntarily, but it's, you know, when you come, you're getting told something, you're getting preached to, and the Holy Spirit can use that. Like Michael said, that those sermons saved him. Those sermons didn't actually save him. God saved him. But those sermons, the sermons God used, Timothy, Mike, or Brandon, Ezra, preaching the gospel, preaching what is right, what is wrong, preaching the truth, to teach him and to make him so he could understand what he needed to do, what he needed to let go of. And to surrender to Christ and allow Christ to do the work in his life. But so we're in New York. Mr. Buckingham was the man in the military. To this day, he's one of the godliest men I know. And you can go off, if you want to go off in the military, non-resistance thing, you can go there sometime. He was the guy who actually talked me out of joining the military, because there was a time, this was around 2002 or so. I was around 03-ish, because that was right when we went into Iraq, and I was pretty fired up with all the patriotism, and I was going to go, you know, help teach Saddam Hussein a lesson. So I was very, very seriously considering joining the military at that time. And he's a lieutenant colonel. His father was a two-star general, you know, so they had plenty of military going on in that family. So I talked to him about it, and he basically told me, not as a Christian, he said, I'm here. He said, I'm on my way out. He retired shortly thereafter, he said, but, you know, and they've grown a lot and changed, but even since then. But at any rate, so we, for about 3 years, we fellowship with them every week. And that was some of the darkest years of my life as far as sin goes and some of the, you know, what I was doing and messing around with. Music I was listening to, just all kinds of stuff. But there's always this thing. I could write my family off. My parents, I could, well, you know, I could write their religion off very easily because it was not very consistent. And it was, I could easily write it off mentally. That was whatever, you know. But I couldn't write off Mr. Buckingham, the Buckingham family. The whole family. To this day, it is one of the only large families. Like the only one I can think of off the top of my head, maybe, I don't know the Kleins real well, but from appearances, where the entire family is on board in unison. In other words, there aren't two or three bad apples running around. You know, where, you know, you get the oldest two or three are following God, the other couple ran out, you know, where you get, and there's just all kinds, you know, where the family fractured. It's one of very, very few large families. The entire family was in harmony. And I knew because I knew the kids and I was friends with some of the kids and all the kids, but there wasn't the constant internal rivalries and bickering and bullying and cliques and all that kind of stuff that happens in large families, and it's very common. I couldn't get away from his testimony. I couldn't get away from what he did and who he was. It wasn't that he preached at me or whatever like that. It's just who he was, how he interacted with his family, how he interacted with his wife. You can't get away from that. And there was one point shortly before they left, they ended up getting, he got deployed to Alaska, where the other half of the U.S. military is. He got deployed to Alaska shortly before they left. My family had gone on vacation. They went on vacation every year, once or twice, 1 or 2 weeks a summer. They go camping somewhere. Every year we did it for years. At this point, I didn't want to be with the family. I didn't want to be seen with the family. My mom had gotten really conservative, so they were wearing really conservative long dresses and stuff. And I didn't like cape dress kind of things, and I didn't want anything to do with that. We'd go shopping, I'd walk 50 yards behind if I could, you know, just, I didn't want anything to do with it. It was just like, that's my mom. So they were going camping. I didn't want to go camping. I would make some excuse. It was in the summertime. I worked in the concrete, in sand and gravel and concrete. We were busy. That was busy season. It was way too busy. I couldn't get off. So, no, I just can't get off. The boss won't let me. I'll get fired. So that was my line. So I'd stay home and watch, go to the movie store and rent movies. This was back in the VHS movie days. This is all I knew. So I'd go and rent movies and watch movies all weekend, all week, every night after work. And Mr. Buckingham, on Sunday, or, you know, that Sunday, the week they were gone, invited me out to go with them and do something, and we went on a little hike or something. Then afterwards, he took me out to eat, just me and him. And he talked to me seriously, asked me some serious point-blank questions, like, well, how are you doing spiritually? What do you, you know, I didn't really want to answer, and I kind of, yeah, it's all good, you know, kind of. And he didn't really push, he didn't prod, he didn't, like, go boring in and whatever, he just... But that stuck with me. Nobody had ever done that. Nobody had ever, like, no man, no old, you know, grown older man, somebody, especially somebody I respected. And especially at that point in my life, men kind of had to earn my respect more. You know, Mr. Buckingham, you know, he'd been in the Army Rangers, and he was still pretty fit. He could out physically do any of us. Guys, even his sons, you know, he could shimmy up a pole and do a flag on the pole, or you hold a pole and your body straight out and stuff like that. I mean, he was, you know, he could, he wasn't a show off. He just kept messing around with the boys and stuff. And he just impressed me. He was the kind of guy, I was impressed by him as far as who he was. You know, this guy who's kind of like big, he's up there. I mean, he's a big shot in the Army and all this, and he's going to like take this time at like, this guy cares. There's something there. It just stuck with me. I couldn't get away. Nothing happened right then, but I couldn't dispense with that. You know, most other things you can kind of toss. All this, you toss it. You do something with it. Everything that comes in your life, you're going to put it somewhere. Ruth says you file it. She's got these little files. I didn't have anywhere to put that. So it was maybe a couple years later, but at this point, even though we really weren't in church, I'm being convicted just by the Buckingham family, by things. And this is kind of, this spaces out over a period of 3 or 4 years. It's kind of points, and there's things that happen, and there's kind of like that underlying tension or unrest that's always there. And you kind of bury it, you know, you get really busy at work, so you might bury it for a few months because you're working 70 hours a week, whatever, but it's still there. You can't get rid of it. And another summer or two later, whatever, my parents went camping again, like they always did. This time they were going out in western Pennsylvania. At this time, my basically God was outside of work, was hunting and fishing. That's when I wasn't working, I was hunting and fishing, buying, collecting guns, fishing, buying fishing equipment, whatever. They were going out camping on a lake out in western Pennsylvania. Oh, we want you to come. Yeah. I'm too busy. Finally, they basically pushed me into coming. So I'm like, okay. They were going from like, you know, Friday to Monday. You know, you kind of get like 2 full weekends and the week in between. I'm like, we're so busy at work. I can't take up. I'll go Saturday morning or Friday or whatever it was. And I think Saturday morning, or Friday night, whatever. And I can stay till Tuesday. I can't stay, you know, I got to leave Tuesday because I got to get back to work on Wednesday because we got a big job or something. Which I probably made up, but whatever. At this point, I've been with the company for long enough. The turnover rate was high enough. I've been there like 3 or 4 years, which was kind of a long time there. I could have gotten anything I wanted, you know, a week off. But the only reason I really went was I wanted to go fishing. It was on a lake that I wanted to fish. And, okay, I'll tag along. Basically, I'll hit the lake at 5 in the morning, and I'll be back late, and I pretty much do my own thing. So I brought my boat, went up there, The very first morning, it was a Saturday morning, it was the first morning. I think we got up there Friday night. We hadn't been there 2 hours. And we're setting up camp. I'm helping my dad set the camper up and this, that, and the other thing. And here goes like three or four girls go cruising by on bikes with long jean skirts. My mom goes, I go, please, you know. Next thing you know, we get camp set up and they go cruising around or whatever. And hold your breath. There's a Pentecostal Holiness Church. They're kind of way over in the fringes of like reality, doctrine-wise, but there's a Pentecostal Holiness Church, actually a church a little bit like this, in that there was the preacher and most everybody else is related to him and a couple other people, and that was the church. You know, they've been there for like 20 years. Out in the middle of nowhere in western Pennsylvania. It was like this little town, there was like nothing there. But it'd be the equivalent of being like in Land O' Lakes, you know. Most everybody there, the preacher, whatever, my parents, they're over there, like all piling up with them, and I'm piling up myself in the boat. There's this one guy there. He was a young guy, about my age. He was married like 4 years. They couldn't have kids yet, or they were having a lot of troubles. They were just the two of them, named Jeremy, and he was kind of like Ezra, personality-wise. And he liked fishing, and I liked fishing, and basically he was the kind of guy, he came up, hey, my name's Jeremy. I'm like, hi, I'm Aaron. I didn't, like, ask to get to know you, so. You know, and he pretty much was like, you like fishing, pretty much, I don't remember exactly, basically it was a time, more or less, hop in the boat, so let's go. What do you know, he's sitting in the front of the boat, you know, so off we go. So we go fishing, and I mean, I actually kind of liked him. He was kind of fun, you know. He was kind of a goofball and just had a good sense of humor and whatever. Didn't bother me. Wasn't like being all super religious. He wasn't pushing me on anything. So I was okay. You know, you do your thing, I'll do mine. I kind of knew how to act, so I was trying to act like I was supposed to. But for the next couple days, I'm hanging out with him. I didn't hang out with anybody else in the group, except for this one other kid that caught a pike that was this long, and I was pretty impressed. I went to see the pike, you know, because I had the cooler or something like that. I don't know, it was a big pike. I think it's one I'd seen. But so the whole time, this guy's real. And he likes fishing, but he's real. And it's another thing, I don't know where to put this. Like, I'm not used to real Christians. I'm used to people who are pretending to be Christians, or claim they're Christians, but aren't real, aren't acting real. So, I don't know where to put this. He's not bothering me. He didn't once, not once, in that whole 2 or 3 days I was with him, we'd spent a lot of time fishing, not once did he ever ask me if I was saved, give me the plan of salvation, whatever. He just was a Christian, and he acted like one. You know, I remember at one point we're fishing out here and some guy in a jet boat, those idiots in jet boats, and they come flying out and basically throws a wake at it. You know, I got this little jumbo. He comes and buzzes the boat, wings a wake at us, rocks, you know, all this messes of fishing up and whatever. And I cursed at him. I don't remember what I said, but I cursed at him under my breath, and I was really nervous that Jeremy had heard me, you know. I don't remember all what happened, but very specifically, I remember we decided we were going to go fishing at night. We were going to catch lots of fish at night. So there's this dock at the end of this campground. It's in this point, this lake in Pennsylvania. And this is out in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania. There are no cities for 100 miles. It's dark. When it's dark out there. There's no light. So we're sitting out there. All it is starlight. It's as dark as anything. For like 4 or 5 hours, we fished till like 1 o'clock. We didn't catch anything. We're sitting there, sitting on this dock, getting very bored, getting tired, whatever. And I'm just bored, thinking about trying to figure out why we're not catching anything. There's supposed to be catfish or something there. And he's sitting there on the dock with his feet in the water, and he's like, and there's a little bit of moon tracer or moonlight coming across the water, and he's like, Wouldn't it be awesome if the master came walking across the water right now, just like Peter and John, you know, or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, sure. And it's like, I'm like, why did he think of that? Like, we're not in church. What brought that on? You know, that's who he was. That was just his life. You know, he's sitting there bored, not catching fish, and he's thinking about, you know, Peter and John fishing and what would happen, you know, and by the time Tuesday came, I didn't want to go home. Now that's kind of big. I mean, I didn't want to go home. I actually went so far as to call my boss and I got another day. I called my dispatcher, I got another day off. So I didn't go home, I put it off a day. And Wednesday I'm going home, and I mean, I had never had conviction of sin like that. I mean, I just saw myself for who I was. It was just there. I mean, I remember crying on the way back. That was the first time I remember crying since I got spanked last, which had been a long time before that. So my dad doesn't cry, you just don't cry. And on the way back, my dispatcher calls me up, and I did a lot of palling around my dispatcher because he was a guy from New York, and it's like this little mafia thing at the concrete company. So you rub his back, he rubs yours, and kind of thing. And he calls me up on the way back, and he's all joking and laughing, telling jokes about what's going on, basically checking to make sure I was going to be back the next morning, and just telling me all the stuff that happened over the last 3 days, joking. And, of course, that's a very clean way of saying what he was saying. What he's saying is very foul. He's, you know, I'll see you tomorrow. It's like, yeah, bye. And for the first time, I didn't think it was funny. It just made me sick, but I didn't know what to do about it. And I went home and I remember laying on the floor crying. I didn't know what to do. It was just, you know, and a couple more years went. I have to really think to get the time frames lined up. Yeah, it would have been the following. No, this would have been the fall. This would have been like September or so. You guys went camping in September. This would have been about September. In the winter time, somewhere in January or so, I went back out to see Jeremy for a couple days. Stayed with him. We went and did a little bit of hunting and whatever. Went to their church. Maybe it was more like March. I went to their church. I wanted to go to their church. I wanted to hear this guy preach and whatever. Now this guy is one of these preachers he's a Pentecostal holiness. So they're holiness and Pentecostal, kind of like all mixed together. And they got saved a lot because they lost their salvation a lot because that's the holiness part and stuff. And that's another story. But anyway, the pastor preached on Luke 16, the rich man Lazarus in hell. And he was one of the preachers. He stood up in the pulpit, and from the first sentence, his voice was cracking. He was peaking. As loud as you can scream, your voice is cracking. Until he finished, which was about 40 minutes. The entire sermon, he was gasping for breath. Just one of those wheezers, you know. He screams out a phrase, you know, just like that. And he's got the skin dripping off of the rich man's body and sizzling and popping like bacon in hell. And, you know, it was quite dramatic. Half of me made up, but I mean, it could have been, I guess, you know. But it had quite the, I'd never heard anything like that before. Like, whoa. You know, and he's talking about hell, and this has been uncomfortable for me the whole time. God can use anybody. God can use Satan to do his will. Not that this man wasn't Satan. I believe this man was a good man. You know, I don't agree with what they do, but God used him at that point. That's where I was, and God can use anything and anybody. And I go home, and this is on my mind. It's on my mind. I get home, my parents have been home churching, and they were starting to get to the point where they were realizing this home churching thing wasn't working. It took like 5 years. They're starting to get really... My mom, the whole time growing up, we were heavily involved in the homeschool movement. Mom was a support group leader, this big support group. She was She got up at 4 o'clock in the morning. She went to bed at 11. And just all the time she had a phone like this with a baby and a spoon like, you know, that's just the way it was. All afternoon, you know, we did school all morning and she was pretty rigid with school. And all afternoon she's on her feet running, doing, going. But she ran a support group. So we were in contact with all the homeschool, kind of the loose. And the homeschool movement is basically a loose association of everybody who doesn't like public school and has some form of religion. Usually loosely evangelical, and it all kind of mixes, and you got everything in there, and it's not very Christian. It's not necessarily evil, but it's a lot of people, that's their church, that's their fellowship. And so, in other words, all mom's friends, all our friends growing up, all those people were kind of loosely whatever. One was a Pentecostal, one was this, one was, I remember my mom's best friend was a Pentecostal, so I remember that. But the other ones, you know, it's just kind of whatever. So there was this family came up from New York. They came moved up from New York City. The guy was a New York City firefighter. We kind of known him for a few years, very loosely. Mom had given her some school stuff, curriculum or something at some point. And a very loose associate. We were not friends with them. They lived in the same town, but just kind of, oh, there's a so-and-so's. Well, one of those foster kids that we had, that we had adopted, was getting really bad at that time. This is, she gotten older, so she was, I don't know. And she would run off from home or whatever. So this particular morning, she ran off. Mom went off the car, found her, decided, okay, she's going to try something different, decided to take her down to this local diner, which we never went to. It's called the Cup and Saucer Diner. We never went there ever. I never remember going there. I went once with a friend. In other words, my parents never went to this diner. It's just, my mom's like, okay, well, I'm going to take her for breakfast. Maybe that'll help. We'll just be this like mother-daughter time. Mom never did that. She goes there. Well, here's this guy with his three daughters doing the same thing. They get there. Oh, hi, how are you? You know. He starts telling them about this new church he just found. This church is in Pennsylvania. I grew up in the Hudson Valley. Hudson Valley is here. New York City is here. The Hudson Valley is here. The Pocono Mountains are right here. Scranton, Pennsylvania is over here. Nobody from there goes over there. It's like, it's just, there's two different areas. It's like knowing people in Green Bay. Yeah, people know people in Green Bay, but we got our thing up here. We go down to Wausau and we need stuff, whatever. Nobody goes to Green Bay. And we, you know what I'm saying? It's just a different area. You don't happen to bump into somebody from Green Bay. Or, you know, whatever. It's an hour and a half away. Oh, this church is great. This is amazing. Anyway, to make a long story short, because I'm running out of time, next Sunday, my parents decided, they were kind of getting desperate, and they decided to go. I didn't want to go, but I went. And that's the church in Pennsylvania that we went to, that we were there for about 8 years. My parents were still there. The very first Sunday, the whole afternoon service, they kind of had an afternoon service, a little more informal. The preacher is preaching on salvation. He's preaching about people he'd witnessed to that got killed 2 weeks later. That rejected him and stuff like this. And I'm like, okay, wow. I mean, he was giving testimonies, his own testimony, and mixing up some different stories and stuff. And he had a lot of power. And about 6 months after that, the interesting thing on the side note, this church was really conservative. The family that led us, that introduced us to this church, was only there about 6 months after we started coming. They were never very conservative. They ended up washing out, and they're whatever. They kind of all scattered different directions as far as real Christianity. God was working in my heart, being under that preaching, hearing that preaching every week. Keith Daniel came in the fall. That fall was 2005, was the first time I heard him. I've told some people this story, but like, I was going to go hunting. The morning, the opening morning of the meeting was Saturday morning. It was Friday night and then Saturday morning. Saturday morning was opening day for deer season. If you're a hunter, you don't miss opening day. I think most people around know hunting, like opening day is like, that's it. That's they talked me into going Friday night. So I come Friday night. This preacher from South Africa, he's amazing. He's setting everything. I'm like, okay, whatever. I mean, it can't hurt. So I come, I'm expecting a black guy from Africa. That's what they are from Africa. They're black guys. So I'm sitting near the front of the second row back, right about where Don is sitting right now is where I was sitting. And here comes Keith Daniel. They had two, the pulpit, the platform there is about that big, and they had, the ladies have put two flowers, potted flowers, on your sides. There's the pot there and the pot there. He came up, and you know Keith Daniel. Keith Daniel is not the Marlboro man. He doesn't have that kind of air to him, and that's kind of still, that's the kind of thing that impressed me at that point. He comes up, oh, hello, starts cooing over, goes over, smells the flowers, starts cooing over the flowers. I'm like, you know, it's like, oh, please, guys don't coo on flowers, you know. So he started preaching. 5 minutes, he preached for over 2 hours. After 5 minutes, I forgot, I didn't know where I was. You know, I just, it was like, I was there. And right then and there, I decided opening season was off, or deer season was off. You know, tomorrow, opening day was off, coming back here. And I did, and there was an older guy, Paul Whittle, went to the church. He was kind of one of those old school boys, you know, good old boy kind of. I mean, he's a godly man, but he's just old school, back in the 50s and all that. He'd driven mixers and he'd driven wreckers back in the 50s, and he'd tell me stories about all sorts of stories and drama about that. And he'd been a mechanic. He owned the garage, and he's the guy I worked for 4 years before I came here. And he'd kind of taken an interest in me, and he was more the Marlboro. He wasn't the Marlboro man, okay, but he just had that more just, you know, old school American, all-American boy. He invited me over to his house, and that afternoon, Saturday afternoon, after hearing the sermon in the morning, and I could go into that more, but we're already running way over. He, you know, I went down in the back, and I remember there was a lake down behind, way down in the woods, down a reservoir down below our house. There was a trail that went down a half mile, whatever, down to the reservoir. So I'm walking down there, and it was the point I just was like, you know, I had just driven my truck. I had a brand new truck, a truck about 6 months old at that time. Maybe a year. But brand new truck, and I was going to go four-wheeling that afternoon. I didn't go four-wheeling. That was kind of, I mean, that was everything. And I just went down, and we're walking down in the back, and I was just like, give up. Give up. Hang on to a lot of stuff. And this is over a year point from the time I met Jeremy to the time. It was just a point where I just gave up. You let go. If you don't, you cannot reach on and reach to Christ and grab on to Christ with an armload of stuff. You got to get out of the truck. For me, it was the truck. I mean, this truck, I've been playing this truck for years. You know, I still have the 1999 Ford Motor Company book. It's all dog ear and worn up, you know, worn out. I used to pour over a 99 when I was whatever, before I could even drive. In 2005, I bought the truck. You know, this was it. But you can't be hanging on to all this, all what you want to do, your own dreams, your life. You can't be hanging on to that and tell me you're a Christian, because that's got to go. This is where I was going to go originally, but salvation is turning from darkness to light. It's a transformation of everything changes. Within a couple week after Keith Daniel, that point when Keith Daniel was coming, was there, I'm not sure exactly to this day whether I was saved that afternoon behind Paul Whittle's house or about a couple months earlier when I really, Tim Hargett had preached a message, and it really convicted me, and I went out back behind the church and prayed for a long time, and I'm not sure whether I was saved then, I'm not sure. But I know there was that period of time, and after those Keith Daniel meetings, it was over. I didn't care. You know, that whole summer before, I've been working, I've been starting at 5 o'clock in the morning, work until between 6 to 10 at night. We've been really busy, That was it. Job-wise, I'd worked so hard so many years to get to where I was at that company, where I was one of the top guys in the company. I was managing the yard, descending into crushers and all this. It was what my dream was. that was it. It was over. I didn't care. You know, it was... For me, and I think the spirit of Satan, in Isaiah 14, you find... I'm going to run over a little bit. I'm not going to worry about it. The coffee drinking will have to... I don't know. I won't speak again for a long time to make up for it. In Isaiah 14:12 says, "How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nations?" We're talking about Satan, Lucifer. For thou hast said in thine heart, this is what Satan said in thine heart, this is why Satan got thrown out of heaven. This is why Satan and God had that falling out originally. This is where Satan came from, as we know it. This is who Satan is. "For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. I will do what I want to do." You got five I wills here. I will do what I want to do, which is be in charge and be in control. I will be like God. God is in charge. If you're in charge of your life, if you're in charge, you have the spirit of Satan. I will be in charge. I will call my own shots. I will do what I want to do. I will listen to the kind of music I want to listen to. I will have the career I want. I will do what... For a different person, it's a different thing for everybody. For me... it was hunting and fishing. It was my truck. It was the life I wanted. My dream was to live in a place like Wisconsin and have 100 acres back in the woods, a log home on a little lake and all this kind of stuff. And just a little perfect, nice little life and four little kids. You know, just whatever. The whole nice little thing. That was it. Where I go fishing every weekend and whatever. For everybody else, you might think that's crazy. I mean, you know, Timothy Pendursky never had the dream of having a brand new four-wheel drive Ford pickup and... whatever, but he had something else. Everybody had something. There's your will. There's the control and leadership of your life that you're hanging on to, that you have. You have the wheel. You have the steering wheel. As long as you're hanging on to that steering wheel, you can't be saved. I don't care if you go pray a prayer. I don't care if you come to church every Sunday for the rest of your life. If you are not willing to turn from sin, which the essence of sin is willfulness, I will do what I want to do. As long as you're doing what you want to do, and this can come right down to even after you're saved as a Christian, if you can't be told something, if you can't be taught, if you get something in your head, this is what you're going to do, no matter what anybody tells you, you're going to do that. Because you decided that, or whatever. That is the spirit of Satan. I will. I will do what I want to do. Just as another side note, what I was just mentioning, as we're talking about with Michael being baptized, Sammy being baptized last week, Mark 16:16, Christ commanded, and we'll read that very briefly, quickly. Jesus said, "He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved." They're connected. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. He that believeth not shall be damned. Now we all know that salvation is not baptism is not a prerequisite for salvation. It's not a work. If you're not saved, the thief on the cross, the dying thief on the cross was not baptized. Everybody else you find in the New Testament was. The early church, I believe, is either the Anabaptists, I believe it was the early church, had a problem at a certain point. I think it was in Rome. There were a lot of people that were getting converted. And at that point, they were getting converted and they were being martyred almost on the spot, or very before they literally had a chance to get them to water to get them baptized. And they're like, "What do we do? What's going on here?" And they had a powwow or whatever. And they came to the conclusion that they were baptized in blood. Okay, but they had to think this through. Wait a minute. Jesus said, you believe and you're baptized. Some of these people are dying without being baptized. Well, everyone in the New Testament, you find when someone is saved, they're baptized immediately after. It's the first step of obedience for a Christian. So if you're going to tell me, well, I'm a Christian. If you're a Christian, that's great. That means John 14:23, you who loves me will keep my commandments. If a man love me, he will keep my words, and my Father will love him, and we will come unto him and make our abode in him. If you love him, you'll keep his words, which is a lot of things in life. Jesus, there's a lot that we can spend the rest of the week talking about the commands of Christ. The first command of Christ after you're saved is that you be baptized. So you're going to tell me, oh, I'm a Christian. And you say, oh, great. But I haven't yet obeyed the very first commandment of Christ. Oh, which other ones aren't you obeying? You haven't obeyed the first one, you're not obeying the rest of them. You're still in control. I got some verses here. We don't have the time to go through them. Just read the book of Acts if you're curious. Every time someone is saved, they're baptized virtually immediately. Many times, right at that moment, like, you're saved, let's go find the creek. Samuel gets saved. The first thing he wants to do is get baptized. That's Michael. It's like, whoa, we need to get baptized. Baptism comes after salvation. I was baptized when I was 12 years old. There came a point in my life where, about a year after I was saved, it was in fall 2006, where Brother Tim had been preaching about baptism and things like that, and I'm like, well, wait a minute, when was I saved? I know the transformation had happened, the total change had happened in my life the year before, but I kind of had this thing, from back when, and I spent a lot of time. I spent a weekend, actually. I took like 3 or 4 days, and I went up in the mountains of Pennsylvania, in the Andes Mountain area. And I was out in the middle of nowhere, and I went fasting, and I was praying, what should I do? When was I saved? When, could I possibly been saved that whole time I was in all that sin? I was kind of confused and a little misguided. I'm laying there in James 4:4. I'm laying on the top of this big rock, this huge rock, about the size of a car. The rock, you had to climb up on top. I'm laying on there. I'm exhausted because I hadn't eaten in a couple days. I'm kind of half sleeping. I had this little teeny Bible with me. And I'm just trying to understand and answer what God was saying here, or what God wanted. Where can I find James? And I picked it up. I reached over and I picked it up, and here's James. I don't know. I do those random things. Whatever, but James 4:4, ye adulteresses and adulteresses, know ye not that the friendship of the world is enmity with God? Whosoever therefore be a friend of the world is the enemy of God. And it was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. I was baptized when I was 12. I wasn't saved then. So that doesn't count. You're baptized after you're saved. So I looked at my life. I was baptized when I was 12. I was in all sorts of sin, every kind of sin I can imagine from that point until the time I was saved, so I was about 24. I wasn't saved. You're not saved living like that. You're a friend of the world. Whosoever therefore be a friend of the world is the enemy of God. It was crystal clear to me. I was the enemy of God for all those years. Well, that's not salvation. You're not saved. Now I really need to get baptized, and I got baptized shortly thereafter. But baptism is the first step of obedience after salvation. And that's why we're having a baptism for Michael after. So, we can dismiss for what's left of the break.